the plant that we're starting to get some media coverage, and because I think for whatever reason we weren't getting that earlier. But there is a sizable and growing group of people here who don't want to see this happen.
I think there are a lot of people who are complacent in this town because they thought that it was a done deal, and that's the way that the port and the city has portrayed it. And I think we as a citizen, we want to have real conversation. That's really the message we want. And so it's disturbing when we have, you know, like our mayor or city council members say it's a done deal when in fact it's not. So it's confusing for people. So we're excited about this kind of coverage because it's not a done deal.
And what's your name?
Whitney Jackson.
And you're a Warm Springs tribal member?
Yes, Confederated Tribes of Warm Springs. I'm enrolled there, but I'm also... I'm Warm Springs, Nez Perce, and Yakima.
So you're out here supporting anime in this fast and in opposition to the Nestle bottling plant. Obviously, the Austin Green wrote a letter, the head of the tribal council, to Kate Brown asking for her to relook at this, to look at this decision by Oregon Department of Fish and Wildlife to do this water exchange. Obviously, you're out here in support, so you're obviously against this Nestle water project. Why is that?
I'm against this Nestle because my people live on the water. We fish in the water. We drink the water. And it's in our treaty of 1855 that, you know, the government said, you know, we're able to use this. It's our right to use this, you know, just not tribal members, but, you know, non-natives also. You know, future generations, we fish on this river. As long as I could remember, I fished on this river at Cascade Locks. I caught my first fish at Cascade Locks when I was about 3-4 years old. And, you know, if we do this water exchange, and it's going to be bad. We're not gonna have any. The fish are going to die, and it's just going to be bad. I'm against it, and I'll stand here as long as I can with anime.
So how much awareness is there at Warm Springs about this issue, do you think?
All I've seen it is on Facebook. There's plenty of groups. I had no idea about it actually until yesterday morning, and I saw it and I started posting it all over my Facebook 5 or 6 times. I don't know. I think people might have, you know, gotten tired of me posting it, but you know, it needs to be out there. We need to stand and fight the good fight, and that's what I'm here for.
Nestle equals dead salmon. Nestle equals dead.
Those were the voices of tribal members and residents of Cascade Locks speaking in opposition to a proposed water bottling plant on the Columbia River in the city of Cascade Locks. A rally is planned for September 16th at the state capitol in Salem. More information could be found on the Facebook page, No Nestle in Cascade Locks.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Good evening and welcome to Labor Radio. This is Jamie Partridge, your host. We'll be hearing from 3 economists in support of a $15 minimum wage. They are Mary King, Professor Emerita of Economics at Portland State University, Robin Hanel, also from Portland State University, and Marty Hart Landsberg from Lewis and Clark College. This press conference took place on the 18th of August at Portland State University. We're going to hear today from 3 economists who have signed on to a letter along with 200 plus other economists in support of a $15 minimum wage at the federal level, and they're here to join us and talk about their support for a $15 minimum wage here in Oregon. So without further ado, Mary King, Professor Emerita of Economics here at Portland State University.
Thank you Jamie, thank you. I'm Mary King. I am a labor economist and a professor emerita here at Portland State. And I'd like to tell you why I joined a large group of economists who signed a letter this summer supporting a federal minimum wage of $15 by 2020 at the latest. A substantial increase in the minimum wage is long overdue. Many of you know nationally our minimum wage policy is a disgrace. The minimum wage hit its peak value in 1968. Its equivalent, which would be equivalent now to $11 an hour in 2015. In Oregon, we feel good to have a minimum wage of 9 1/4. That's still only 84% of what our national minimum was half a century ago. Our nation is nearly twice as wealthy in terms of GDP per person as it was, but our minimum wage is much lower as a direct result of policy decisions. This is not the market. This is not inevitable. People have made decisions that have us here, and that's why we have much lower wage at the bottom than do all the other wealthy nations. We're worse off for it. We suffer more inequality, more poverty, more homelessness, bigger gaps between women and men, between people of color and whites. We suffer worse health, less economic mobility, and more despair. All of which is completely unnecessary. We can again have a vibrant, thriving economy with much higher wages at the bottom, more like the economy most of us grew up in, before wages in the bottom quarter fell precipitately while the top soared. Many of you are familiar with the Oregon Center for Public Policy. They do terrific analysis of the economic situation here in our state. They've showed that over the last 30 years, the income that goes to the top 1% in this state has increased so much that it's now more than double what the bottom 40% get. It's now more than double, whereas 30 years ago, it was not even as much. That's a huge change, and it's why it's going on all over the country, and it's why I and more than 200 economists signed that letter this summer in a very short period, calling for a federal minimum of $15. Now, conditions aren't the same in all the states. Conditions aren't the same in all the counties in Oregon. But everywhere, wages at less than $15 are a poverty wage. That's also why I testified in front of the state legislature this spring in support of a plan to get Oregonians to $15 in the next few years. I wanted legislators to know that economists' understanding of the impact of the minimum wage has changed dramatically in 25 years. We're using much stronger analytical methods than were previously used. We can now observe what they call natural experiments when states have different minimums, which has changed the understanding of economists who are paying attention. A higher minimum wage in one state than exists in other neighboring states did not create unemployment in the higher wage state. And in fact, the University of Massachusetts professor Arundhati Dubey has studied every single pair of adjacent counties in states with different minimum wages between 1990 and 2006 and found no discernible impacts on employment in the higher wage counties, not for teens, not for restaurant workers, and not for workers in retail stores. And those are the industries where minimum wage workers make up an unusual proportion of the employees. The reason that that unemployment did not happen was because wage increases are actually a very small proportion of operating costs overall, and they're offset by savings due to lower turnover, higher productivity, and increased sales. San Francisco has already hiked its minimum wage to 12 1/4 on its way to $15 an hour. Unemployment in San Francisco City and County is 3.5%, and prices there are rising at a rate no faster than before. It's not true that businesses will move if we raise our minimum wage higher than other states. The major low-wage employers are restaurants, hotels, and retail stores, and these are operations that need to be where their customers are. Right now, the state of Idaho has a minimum wage that's $2 lower than ours here in Oregon. Oregon companies are not moving to Idaho. You are not going to Idaho for a meal. As a young woman, I waited tables in Australia. Now, that's a society and economy a lot like ours in many respects. The minimum wage in Australia right now is $17.29 Australian. That's equivalent to $13 US, and there is no shortage of restaurants in Australia. Most of us assume that a higher minimum wage will increase operating costs far more than emerges once you go and study the cost structure of different industries. And on this point, I would suggest you have a look at a really extremely thoughtful analysis that was done by UC Berkeley economists for the city of Los Angeles when they were considering a proposal that they have since passed to increase the citywide minimum wage to $15. That study projects that total employer operating costs will increase by less than 1% overall. They project that Los Angeles economic activity and city tax revenue will rise. Now, some business owners assert that they'll go out of business if they have to raise wages. We certainly heard this at the legislature, and some may. But the price paid by the community to keep them open is too high. We don't allow businesses to stay open with child labor. It's not worth it. And similarly, we cannot allow businesses that stay open that are reliant on paying wages that are too low. But the fact is that most businesses will be just fine because they will have more customers spending more money locally. A lot of business owners really don't have a way of knowing that personnel turnover and all the associated costs of recruiting and training fall markedly when wages rise, and that offsets the higher wages that they pay. It's easier for people to stay in jobs where they've been trained when their lives work, and that is what's important with a higher minimum wage. What's more, for the rest of us, higher minimum wages combat a wide range of social problems by making work pay and reducing poverty and everything that results from poverty: hunger, crime, substance abuse, early childbearing, kids in low-quality childcare, school teachers struggling to overcome the impact of kids coming to school hungry without a consistent place to live. Higher minimum wages ameliorate the lower earnings of women and single mothers, and therefore the poverty of older women, as well as they reduce the economic disparities by race and ethnicity and the disproportionate poverty in communities of color in this state and nation. A substantial increase in the minimum wage begins to counter the terrible growth of economic inequality that makes a joke of equal political participation in this country now. While the U.S. had the highest wages in the world for most of our history, now we have the lowest wages at the bottom and the greatest income inequality of all first world nations. The U.S. Congress may not be able to agree that the sun rises in the east and therefore deal with this question in any way, but we in Oregon can take action here by phasing increases to the state minimum wage so that we hit $15 an hour in the next few years. It's also important that we let cities and local areas decide for themselves if they'd be better off to raise the floor higher. It's just not that big a deal for businesses to enter different wages into their spreadsheets. They manage just fine with all the tremendous variation of differences in local tax structures. All of us in the community benefit from higher wages at the bottom. It's not an accident that the higher wage states and nations are the most prosperous. Higher wages at the bottom support young families and give kids the security they need to succeed and join the mainstream. Local businesses prosper when families have enough to keep up with their rent and other expenses. People who earn less than $15 an hour have to spend nearly every penny they make, and that money is largely spent locally. So for all these reasons, I strongly support the initiative to phase in a minimum wage to $15 an hour. Thank you.
We've got a couple other speakers, two economists. Next up is Marty Hart Landsberg, a professor of economics at Lewis and Clark College.
And I also support the effort to raise the national minimum wage to $15 an hour. And given that this effort is nowhere near a victory, I am here strongly supporting the state effort to raise the Oregon minimum wage to $15 an hour. We have to start with a clear point that in the U.S. and in Oregon, wages have been stagnant for decades. The economy has grown, people at the top have done well, but most people have not. It would be foolish for us to wait for so-called market forces to change labor market conditions. Supposedly, all we need to do is to continue to support policies designed to raise profits. Raising profits, it is said, will translate into investment, which will mean job creation and more rapid growth, all of which will lift wages. But profits have soared and none of the rest has followed. Firms are not using their money for investment or job creation. The money is going to mergers, higher dividend payouts, and stock repurchases. For example, Bloomberg Businessweek recently reported, and I'm quoting here, that corporate stock buyback announcements so far in 2015 have already topped full-year totals for 2008, 2009, 2010, 2012, and they're on pace to reach an annual record of about $1 trillion. Tragically, it's our low wages that helps to generate the high profits that are being used to fund these mergers, dividend payouts, and stock repurchases. Now, while the top earners greatly benefit from this financialization, the great majority of us don't. The sad reality is that those in decision-making positions have no reason to change policies, which means that working people are stuck unless we act. One way in which we can force a change in this situation, a change that we deserve, is to boost the minimum wage. The minimum wage has been kept low both nationally and in Oregon, and this is a political decision. The federal minimum wage stands at $7.25 an hour. The Oregon minimum wage is $9.25 an hour. The federal minimum wage was last raised in 2009. In real terms, the federal minimum wage hit its high point in 1968, when in current dollar terms, it was $10.85. That is higher than the current federal or current state minimum wage levels. If the 1968 minimum wage had grown by simply the rate of productivity, the federal minimum wage today would be over $21 an hour. One of the arguments used against an increase in the minimum wage is that it will lead to higher unemployment. One can make theoretical arguments for and against this proposition. And of course, the income gains from an increase in the minimum wage are likely to produce overall benefits for both low-wage workers and the economy in whole, even if there is a slight rise in unemployment. Economists have tried to estimate the employment effects of a rise in the minimum wage. Two of them looked at almost 1,500 estimates of the effects of minimum wage increases on employment, and they found that the estimates I'm quoting here clustered right around zero effect. They concluded, with 64 studies containing approximately 1,500 estimates of the effects of minimum wage increases on employment, we have reason to believe that if there is some adverse employment effect from minimum wage rises, it must be of a small and policy irrelevant magnitude. In trying to determine the appropriate value of the minimum wage, some people look at poverty levels. Unfortunately, poverty levels are a poor reference point. These levels are based on mid-1950 spending patterns and early 1960 emergency food budgets that are adjusted for family size and updated by the yearly rate of inflation. They have nothing to do with a basic sustainable living standard. The federal poverty line for a single person is $11,770 a year. For a family of three, it is $20,090 a year. The current Oregon minimum wage would pay a worker who worked 40 hours a week, 52 weeks a year, a total of around $19,000. It is impossible to raise a family. It is impossible even to survive as a single individual on that in most of the state. What makes sense is to think about the minimum wage in terms of what it takes to ensure that a full-time worker is able to provide a safe, decent, yet modest living standard for themselves and their family. We have studies that have done this by calculating a basic family budget and also by examining the income necessary to ensure adequate provision of key services like housing or childcare. These studies all point, and here I am talking about Oregon, to $15 an hour as a reasonable basic minimum for the majority of workers in urban and non-urban areas. And let's also try and be clear about who these minimum wage workers are. Oregon data lets us look at overall numbers and location, but we have to use federal data to gain insight into their likely composition. And here I'm just going to cite a few data points on low-wage workers, meaning workers who make less than $10 an hour, $10 an hour or below. In 1979, 26% of these workers were 16 to 19 years old. By 2011, only 12% were. In 1979, 30% were 35 to 64 years of age. By 2011, 40% were. Looking just at education, in 1979, 40% had less than a high school education. In 2011, it was only 20%. In 1979, 20% had some college. In 2011, it was 35%. 10% of low-wage workers today actually have college degrees. Finally, this push for a higher minimum wage is not only good for those workers who are currently making $15 an hour or less, it will likely be good for the great majority of workers. It has the potential to push up the entire wage contour, increase spending and growth, encourage companies to transform upskill jobs, and even make it possible to lower the tax burden by removing people from public assistance. Of course, no one can ever fully predict the consequences in economic policy, and those who are determined to impose increases in worker wages can always raise questions or construct unusual scenarios. But the economics is strong. The great majority of us would gain from an increase in the minimum wage to $15 an hour.
This is Labor Radio at KBOO in Portland. You're listening to Economists for a $15 minimum wage. Thank you very much, Marty Hart-Landsberg. And our final speaker is Robin Hennell, who's a professor of economics at formerly American University and Portland State University.
Those who argue against raising the minimum wage make two different arguments. One is the people earning less than $15 an hour don't deserve any more. That's what they deserve. If that's what the market gives them, that's what they deserve. The answer to that is very simple. If you think that, go work at one of those jobs and see what it's like. See what the work is like. See that it's hard work. See that the people doing that work deserve to make a decent living. And if you think that, try to live and much less support a family on less than $15 an hour. That's the basic response to that argument. People don't deserve any more. We shouldn't be doing anything about this. So that argument may resonate very well when you're fundraising from cat fat, from fat cats. But it doesn't resonate very well with the general public, because it shouldn't. So the second line of defense is the reason that three of us who are professional economists are here today. The second line of defense is, well, maybe it's morally justifiable to try and help people earning less than $15 an hour, but it's bad economics. It actually hurts the people you're trying to help. That's the argument that we are here to say, no. Professional economists who study this are here to tell you raising the minimum wage is good economics, it's not bad economics. I did a rough calculation, and I believe that collectively, the three of us here today who've spoken, Professor King, Professor Hart-Landsberger, and myself, we have over 100 years of collective experience teaching economics at universities. We have published more books and articles in peer-reviewed journals, economics journals, that anybody would ever want to read. And we represent 200 economists who have said the minimum wage, raising the minimum wage nationally and raising it in states like Oregon when it isn't being raised nationally, makes good economic sense. Let me make a couple of very brief points about why raising the minimum wage makes perfectly good sense. At the very, very broadest level, what economic theory tells us is that a capitalist economy can run perfectly well with different wage rates and profit rates. That in theory, there is no reason that a capitalist economy can't run just as well with a $15 minimum wage and a profit rate of 8% as it can with a $9 wage and a profit rate of 12%. There's nothing about one of those economies that somehow is a better performing capitalist economy. We also have a tremendous amount of empirical evidence. Economists refer to the period from roughly the end of World War II up to the mid-1960s, early 1970s, as the golden age of capitalism, at least in the European economies and the North American economies. When we look at wages during that period, during the period when those economies performed better in every sense than they have performed since or previously, those were high-wage economies. Those were economies when unions were strong and wages were strong. So at the theoretical level, high-wage economies work perfectly well, and empirically evidence suggests that. Now, why are we even debating the issue of whether a state, by raising its minimum wage, would be potentially losing jobs to other states? The only reason we're even debating that is, and every economist will agree on this, it is far better to raise the minimum wage nationally than at the state level. And it's far better to wait to raise it at the state level than it is in cities. But the reason we are in this position is precisely because we aren't getting the minimum wage raised at the national level. And quite frankly, as long as the Republicans control the House of Representatives, that's very unlikely. So that's why we have to do what we can do that's good economics wherever we can do it. And that's why I'm supporting raising the minimum wage in Oregon as well as raising the national minimum wage. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mary King, Marty Hart-Landsberg, Robin Hanel. We'll take questions from the press if you have any.
I don't know which one of you wants to take this question, but I noticed that you're making your suggestion in increments. Is that more cost-effective for employers, especially small ones, to bite the bullet and meet the need?
Certainly, it's easier to adjust to what is a proportionately large increase from the point that we've let the wages to the point that we've let wages fall. So yes, it's easier for people to deal with it phased in over 3 or 4 years. Absolutely.
And 3 or 4 years, does that seem realistic to all of you? Because that's still almost a $6 increase.
The last time the minimum wage was increased in Oregon, it was a similar percentage increase. And over, I think it was a 3-year period. And the economy responded well. I mean, one of the things, if we were to take seriously, one of the benefit attributes of capitalism is market processes. And I think a 3-year period is more than satisfactory to allow companies to respond. I mean, as someone mentioned before, you know, they deal with price changes, they deal with commodity changes, they deal with all sorts of things. Lots of companies are claiming they can't get good workers. Well, you know, economics says if you can't get, you raise the wage and you get them. And I think what companies will find also, as the other speakers have said, is that the benefits of stability of a workforce, of willingness to train workers because they know workers will be willing to stay with a sense of survivability from that wage, all will make the transition much easier. But sure, I don't think any of us would say tomorrow, the minimum wage should go from 9 to 15. But a 3-year period when people know what's coming and can begin to plan for that is not beyond the ability of companies to adjust to.
What about wage increase, though, further prohibit someone making $10 an hour flipping burgers to make $15 an hour flipping burgers and not encourage expansion
and
vegetation, actually promoting natural industry within the state like it's never been, so we have actual jobs that deserve making $17 an hour, not funding a fast food industry that doesn't provide anything to the actual citizens in the state. And what you're proposing is going to cripple the economy in the state. That is America working.
Raising the minimum wage to $15 in Oregon will not cripple the economy in Oregon. It will not cause job losses in Oregon. It will improve the economy in Oregon.
Go back here to what we're talking about. Let's go back to what we're talking about, the minimum wage increase. And I think what people are saying is that increasing the minimum wage, again, a wage that's been allowed to fall for many, many years below inflation, to bring it back up to a reasonable wage that can sustain people is not going to destroy this economy. I mean, that's the whole purpose, points, justification of a market economy, right? One of the things is that we want to take, if we want to think about a productive economy, we want to take certain things out of competition. We don't want child labor. We don't want environmental destruction. And we don't want wages that people can't survive on. If we create a context where people have wages that they can survive on, then let businesses compete with new technologies, new products, new ways of organizing production, and we believe that they can do that. And in which case, what we're doing is create an economy that actually works for people.
What do you say to people who are opposing this? Why would they oppose it?
Well, one reason is the media, I think, has been has taken all sorts of very specific vignettes of what will happen to a worker or another worker, and has made people very fearful. Where the economics is what we're saying is that when you look at it, you know, there are very isolated cases. There's no policy that you know you can say with 100% certainty is going to everybody will gain. But the broad economy will gain, the broad group of workers will gain, families will gain by this policy. But you don't read that in the media. You don't see the editorials, you don't see the interviews with economists who make those cases. It's been very difficult to get people to actually look at the economic research. So what we have are just these notions that if you raise wages, somehow you're going to get price people out of the market. When study after study, as Professor King mentioned, we've got a lot of studies now that have actually looked concretely at what happens, and what we see are benefits for the economy. We see the economy being able to adjust, as it should. What does it say to us if we have an economy that can only generate profits if we leave growing numbers of people in poverty? If we have an economy that sustains itself only because more and more people have to be, you know, pay for food stamps and social programs to support workers who aren't being supported by businesses. So I think, you know, what that suggests is people have very little confidence then in this economy if they think its only way to survive is by throwing people off to the side. And we think that the economics shows that isn't necessary. So I think it's fear, and it's fear that's been created by people who, you know, who think that their profits will go down, not that the economy will perform poorly.
That wraps it up for our edition, this edition of Labor Radio. You've been listening to Mary King, professor of economics at Portland State University, Marty Hart Landsberg, Lewis and Clark, professor of economics, and Robin Hanel, Portland State Economics.